He gazes down a little contemptuously from his perch high on the wall, his eyes hooded by heavy lids, eyebrows raised. This is a cynical man, you think, and probably arrogant with it. But then there's the amused mouth, the corners twitching upward and seeming to bury themselves in the luxuriant moustache. And you realise he's probably a man that you could have fun with in his own surroundings. And those surroundings, to judge by his full periwig and the fanciful breastplate with which he's adorned, reminiscent of a Roman warrior's, as well as the quivers full of arrows which lie each side of him, would have been impressively grand. He's Sir Philip Froude, who died on August the 6th, 1674, after serving King Charles I as Colonel of Horse and Colonel of Foot during the whole late war. An old general, so, who in his latter years would probably have rested a gouty foot on a quilted satin stool and growled at his submissive wife as she supervised the menial attendant who applied the bandages. Maybe his grandchildren would have been privileged to be shown the scar of the shoulder wound he had received in ye late war. Except the war in question is the English Civil War, precipitated by the rising demand for an end to absolute monarchy in favour of parliamentary democracy. Charles I's reign fell to that war, and the king was executed in 1649, bringing England under control of Parliament, led by Oliver Cromwell as Lord Protector. So the king's Colonel of Horse outlived his sovereign by a quarter of a century. Cromwell, as Ireland discovered, was not a man to live and let live. God was on his side, and his enemies were God's. And the 10 years until the restoration of the monarchy in 1660, with the arrival back to England of the old king's son, also Charles, who was to earn the title of the Merry Monarch, mind you, anything must have seemed merry after that decade of austere virtue, was not a happy time for England. But it set the model for parliamentary democracy throughout the civilised world. Sir Philip Froude was, above all, a survivor, if nothing else. Cromwell didn't take vengeance on the man who had been so close to the king. And when Charles II ascended the throne, Sir Philip was not singled out for political purging for having survived the Cromwell era. And he must have survived in considerable wealth and luxury, to judge by his massive memorial stone in Bath Abbey, in that beautiful little city in Somerset, where history trips you up at every step. Among myriad impressive memorials, Philip Froude's huge marble plaque hangs prominently and arrogantly on the Abbey's internal wall. And for Irish eyes, there's something in the central scroll to make you smile. He had three wives, ye first, Eleanor Lowther, daughter of Richard Lowther, Esquire of Ye North, by whom he had no issue. Poor Eleanor, dead, having failed in her duty. But the second was Margaret O'Neill, daughter of Brian O'Neill of ye province of Ulster in Ireland, by whom he had four sons, Philip, Frederick, Corney and Charles, and one only daughter, Penelope. Irreverently but irresistibly, you think, up the Irish. There are 1,500 odd memorials in Bath Abbey, and Philip Froude's is one of the most impressive, as well as one of the most beautiful. It's also a monument to his standing in his own day that he was buried in such an historic place. There's been a place of worship on the site since 757 AD. The first, an Anglo-Saxon monastery, which was destroyed by the Normans, who built a cathedral there in 1090. The first king of all England, Edgar, had been crowned in the old monastery in 973. But the Norman cathedral was reduced to ruins by the 15th century, only to be restored, but then fall to Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries. Elizabeth I set about repairing her father's depredations in 1574. There have been many restorations since then, but the Abbey's most famous piece of design was installed by the west door, which looks onto the main square in Bath, facing the Roman Baths and Beau Nash's pump room, where you can still take the waters, as they did in Jane Austen's day. They're disgusting. Flanking the great west window and the west door beneath it are the ladders of angels. They are believed to have been inspired by a centuries-old local bishop, Oliver King, who saw in a dream a pair of ladders mounting to and descending from heaven, with angels climbing on them. Today, the bishop's dream is a reality, installed either side of the great windows, the marvellously carved little angels watching over faithful and tourist alike who go through to pray or just to view other artistic marvels inside, including the 13th century tiled floor discovered a few years ago during another round of restoration. To walk Bath Abbey is to walk English history. And there's the occasional treat of hearing the Bath Festival Chamber Orchestra playing there. It's the resident ensemble for the Bath International Festival, founded by Ian Hunter in 1948, who in 1959 brought in the great Yehudi Menuhin as artistic director. He stayed with them for nearly 10 years, and his legacy lives on. Bath is full of joys, expected and unexpected. Don't forget the famous Sally Lunns, as well as Bath Oliver's, the greatest cheese biscuit in the world. But the Abbey Church is a joy of almost overwhelming glory.